Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. Well, wherever you are, I hope you're enjoying a magnificent summer day. Here in the Pacific Northwest, the sun finally decided that it was going to shine down on us with glorious golden glory. So I'm enjoying every moment of it, and I hope you are too. We have a guest today that is a very unique individual in my particular perception, because this is a woman who not only is interested in history, but she's got an interest in on-ramps and overpasses. That's right. That's what we're going to be talking about. So if you're going to be traveling about the country or you want to know some information about the streets in your neighborhood, the highways and byways, this lady, Diane Perrier, really does have her facts and information together. This is a cultural history of interstate travel. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I absolutely loved your book. First of all,
you.
I think what you've done is absolutely incredible. I don't know that I would have had the patience to do this research. And number two, what I thought absolutely mesmerizing about this book are the reproductions of prints, of various photos that people shared with you. I mean, I'm just in awe of this. How long did it take you to put this publication together on ramps and overpasses?
There's a bit of a story there, because I had initially done a book on Interstate 81, which goes north from the Canadian border down and through the New York, Pennsylvania, the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. And after I approached the University Press of Florida with that one, they came back and said, you know, we really like this one, but have you considered doing a book on all of the interstates as an introduction to a series? So I ended up, well, it took me about 5 years to do the first book on Interstate 81. I put this one together in about 6 or 7 months.
Oh.
And in all honesty, the illustrations that you like are just as much work as piecing them together and finding them is just about just as much work as writing the stories were. But it's kind of like pulling a thread,
mm-hmm.
or a loose stitch on a sweater or something. You find one little piece of information and it leads to another, and your curiosity gets the better of you and you just keep on going.
Well, Mark Twain is the personality that you lead the reader off with in your book. And you have this wonderful illustration showing some scruffy looking dudes sitting on top of a stagecoach in 1861. And this coach ride, and they're talking about eating ham and hard-boiled eggs, and that's about as exciting, you know, when you're sitting up on top of a stagecoach. It's dirty. You're grimy. I can just imagine crunching down on the dirt and grit that's going to cover that hard-boiled egg and salty ham, and he doesn't say anything about water, and it's hot. I mean, the visual on that is enough to say thanks but no thanks. I'll read it in the history books. I never want to live it. It's just, anyway, they are in a coach, and these guys strip down as much as they can, and it was the interstates that are known today as Interstate 70 and 80 that Mark Twain and the others that he was traveling with were riding on. Tell us why you got so interested in the road systems, and what was it that made you choose to do this research?
Curiosity, but I have a university degree in geography, which included transportation geography, and I have worked a good chunk of my adult life as an editor, which has included a great deal of work on construction and advances in road technology, sewer technology, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the interest always was there. I also have interest in literature and in history, and I, like I said, I got interested in what I was seeing and didn't know much about and started researching it and started piecing things together because I was interested in what I was seeing or not seeing, as the case may be, along highways as I was traveling. Like, what was I missing? What were the stories of people that had gone along this way before me? The illustration you refer to, Mark Twain actually published in one of his own books, Roughing It, on his first trip away from home, one of his first trips away from home with his brother to Nevada. And you mentioned that they sat on the top of a stagecoach in their underwear, and at that point in time, men's long underwear in the summertime basically covered them from the neck to the wrists to the ankles.
Mm-hmm.
Eating ham and hard-boiled eggs, well, it's summer, there's no refrigeration. So you know what kind of shape the ham and hard-boiled eggs were in.
Yuck.
And it just kind of started, well, his adventure started from there. He went on to become a well-known writer. But it was, that was one of his first adventures.
Today we live in a world where we take for granted this phenomenal infrastructure that enables us to transport goods, services, and just about anything and everything else, literally thousands and thousands of miles. And we just take this for granted. But this phenomenal infrastructure really didn't evolve until 1956. Give us a little bit of history about that.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt, back in the 30s, had this vision of two or three superhighways running east-west and two or three running north-south. They would help put people back to work, and they would help boost the economy once it really started to get out of the Depression. World War II and his own death in 1945 kind of derailed that. But Dwight Eisenhower had seen how the superhighways in Germany had helped the German army and how they helped the American troops once they started to occupy Germany. So he picked up on Roosevelt's vision and ran with it and signed the legislation creating the interstates in June 1956. But originally they were to connect all of the major cities, all of the capital cities, and everything large in the country with Washington. But a big part of their purpose was to evacuate people in case of a nuclear attack, because this was the depths of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Now they evacuate people ahead of hurricanes, and they really keep the economy humming along, because without them, you wouldn't be getting your fuzzy sweaters from the shopping channel or the latest mm-hmm. kitchen gadgets, or mm-hmm. You wouldn't be going to see grandma at Thanksgiving in several hours. It would take you several days. They have basically changed the American infrastructure, the American way of life in the 50s and 60s, the same way the internet and technologies like Facebook and cell phones are doing it today.
Absolutely. And it is still, it's exceedingly important. And of course, since 1956, there have been tremendous, tremendous amounts of road. I forget, how much road do we have in the United States at this time? Do you know?
No, I don't, oddly enough. I think there's something like, I don't even know the exact count on the interstate mileage anymore. I think it's about 43,000, but I could be very mistaken on that.
Mm-hmm. Plus the other millions of miles of roads in communities, et cetera. And again, we take this so much for granted. And I love how when you're talking about the different interstates, let's go to the one in Philadelphia, which I think was I-91. It was the areas that the Iroquois Six Nations used to travel. And then at the time, This is before anything was really built. It would take a convoy 2 days to get from Philadelphia to Easton, Pennsylvania, a distance of 60 miles.
You're thinking of Ben Franklin.
Uh-huh.
He was tasked with checking the frontier, which at that point in time was about the middle of Pennsylvania, and he had his wife bake for a few days, and he bought a couple of casks of wine, and he set off with a military escort into the frontier, which was about 60 miles from his home in Philadelphia. And it took a couple of weeks to, as you say, to travel 60 or 70 miles. I was talking to a gentleman yesterday in Illinois where the early settlers came from New England. Well, it's not a 2-day trip. It was about an 8-week trip to get from New England to Illinois at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
It took to get out to Washington State. You were basically looking at leaving home somewhere along the East Coast in March, and you would get into Washington State before frost if you were lucky.
It's incredible when you think about that. And today we hop on planes, and in just a matter of a few hours, we're West Coast to East Coast, and by automobile, it takes us just a few days to cover. Well, I remember when I was growing up, I think with the structure they had at that time, that it would take us a full week, 7 days, to go by car across country. Of course, they didn't have a lot of the road area that now is built, but people can go. We would go the southern route down through Arizona and through the warmer states, especially if it was during wintertime, because otherwise you get stuck in snow and ice if you went the northern route. So it's just amazing how rapidly we have expanded with this. I had to chuckle, though, because you have all kinds of historical information in this. I think this would be marvelous for a class, because you give these items of information, and who knew? Here in the Pacific Northwest, we have a fit if we have to pay a toll. And you show information where the Native Americans collected tolls from settlers that crossed their lands. So collecting tolls, I know they did that in Europe too, but this is something that even the Native Americans were doing. Tell us a little bit about that.
I forget whether it was Kentucky or Tennessee, and I think it was the Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't pay the toll, you didn't cross their land, and you also didn't live. So,
nice arrangement. Nice population control method there.
Yes, and so that's how some of the roads deviated around. I really do believe it was Kentucky. Roads deviated around that particular part of the country because obviously people didn't want to be involved. In other parts of the country, some of the early tolls were absolutely horrendous. It was the equivalent of about $20 a day in some East Coast toll turnpikes, which, you know, when you stop and think about it, it's 1700s, 1800s. That's an incredible amount of money.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Gee, what would that be in today's dollars, like $100?
Oh, it'd be thousands, quite literally thousands of dollars.
Oh, my goodness.
Oddly enough, the toll structure that I do believe it was the Cherokee in Kentucky, it deterred the development of roads in that area by European settlers because they all circumvented things. And roads for a long time tended to avoid, especially the east-west, because this was when the frontiers were starting to open up, and the frontier at that point in time would have been land along the east side of the Mississippi River.
Well, you have, again, wonderful bits about history. There was the involvement of the Spanish that went into the Gulf Coast, but you talk about the French in your book and that they established in 1685 a fort along the Texas coast. And they were going to invade what they called the New Spain. And this, all of this area that they moved across was the I-10 corridor. And there's the Tonkawa tribe that ranged across south central Texas. I mean, this is really intriguing. All of these different cultures that had an involvement in the United States in the past history. It's really quite fascinating.
Well, there's, and even in your own area, there's an awful lot of roads that were originally developed, probably in your area it would have been Native American trails.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've got some logging trails that have become highways, that, you know, initially they would have been just a dirt trail to bring logs down out of the heights down to the coast or down to a river to float them to the coast. But now those some of those trails have probably become highways in your part of the world.
Mm-hmm. You talk about so many different areas of the country, and since you have mentioned mine, I'm in the Pacific Northwest. There is so much regarding the area of Yakima. And I thought this was amazing because this town was in one spot and then it was totally moved. And you've got to share that story because I read this and I went, you've got to be kidding. Did this really happen? But it did.
And there's a funny side story to that. When I did an drive-home interview show with a radio station in the Atlanta, Georgia area a few weeks ago, and I was super prepared with absolutely everything about roads in that area, and they asked me to tell the story of Yakima, Washington. So all my preparations went down the drain. Yakima, Washington was a really thriving community with hotel, general store. It had it all. And then the railroad went through about 3 miles north of town, and the town business owners and town fathers recognized that they were in trouble, but what were they going to do about it? And the railroad offered them some lots along their new railroad track, because obviously the railroad wanted to promote its own interests. And town fathers stewed about it for a little while, and then they jacked all of the buildings up on logs and rolled it down the highway to the new location by the railroad. But what's odd about this story is that the hotel, the general store, the bank, they all stayed open as they were rolling down the road to their new location along the railroad tracks. So people would come along, tie their horse up to the hitching post outside the general store and go in and get what they needed as it's rolling down the road, come out, untie their horse and leave. People that were staying at the hotel would find it wherever it was along the roadway at night and crawl in, find their room and sleep for the night, and then leave the next morning as the hotel continues on its trip down the highway. And it apparently took about 2 weeks to get the 3 or 4 miles to the new location.
Fascinating. The resourcefulness of people moving every single building in town.
Well, there were some... There
and
were
staying
some,
open for business.
Well, that's the funny part about it, but there were some homes that decided to stay at the old location. Not everyone. I think all of the businesses went, but mm-hmm. some of the homes stayed behind.
Amazing. You have some terrific photography in here, and you have an image of the Chicago River. And the Chicago River was known as the Big Stink. Now, Interstate 94 crosses over 12th Street near Exit 52, and this came from the Library of Congress, this photo. We were having problems with pollution and all kinds of things a long, long, long time ago. Tell us a little bit about Chicago and about how things developed there.
The Big Stink that you refer to, the Chicago name actually... There's some discussion. Chicago comes from the Native American word, and I think it's for wild garlic, if I'm not mistaken. But not only in Chicago, but all over the country, we treated streams and we treated the environment very badly, you know, raw sewage into it. And in Chicago's case, it was raw sewage plus the industrial pollution. But that was the same story in a lot of It wasn't just Chicago, it was mm-hmm. a lot of communities. I know there's some place in the book where, or it might be in the I-81 book, where it only took about 50 years to pollute some of the major rivers in Pennsylvania, but it's taken over 100 years to bring them back to life.
Mm-hmm.
It was mining, mine tailings and raw sewage and the slop from households and everything else. We would, well, all cultures did it. They dumped it into streams, and it wasn't properly cared for, treated. Pigs were a big part of pollution control in a lot of these cities. They were allowed to run wild in the cities because they ate everything that fell on the streets.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And it wasn't until New York, for instance, I think around 1806, decided to start cleaning up its pig problem, but then they had to start collecting garbage. So there were a few trade-offs to be made. And one of the advantages of the motor car when it first arrived on the scene was that it would get rid of the horse manure in most urban settings.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read somewhere where there's about 40 pounds of manure a day out of the average horse, and that was landing on city streets and just staying there.
Right.
And it would either, when it rained, it would turn to liquid and run all over the place, or if it was really dry, it would pulverize and become a powder in the air. So it was very much a health issue, and the early developers of the motor car, boy, this is really going to clean up urban pollution if we can get all these horses off the street. Well, it's come full circle with the need now to reduce the number of motor cars on city streets.
Fascinating patterns that
yes.
we evolved through. Now, in the late 1700s, the East Coast, and this is in 1700s, had run out of available potential arable land. And there were those people that had it, but there was nothing new. Now, when you stop and think about that, that's the 1700s. Here we are in 2010, and our population expansion is just phenomenal. It's just absolutely amazing. And people go from one point to another, and I absolutely love this one point. Here we have all of this political controversy that's going on today. Back then, because people were picking up from the East Coast saying, we want to get some land, we want to have something of our own, so it's go west, that's what you're supposed to do. And the politicians were worried because their constituents weren't there anymore. They were leaving the East Coast and going someplace else. And I read that, and I thought, that is really something you wouldn't have even considered being an issue. But they were concerned.
Well, like I mentioned earlier, at one point in time, the frontier ran down the middle of Pennsylvania and New York State, and at a few years later, it was the east coast of the east shore of the Mississippi River, and a few years later, 50 years later, it's Kansas, and 50 years later, it's Denver, and it just kept creeping
mm-hmm.
north and west.
Yes, you had the three P's. What were the three P's?
Patience, perseverance, and
profanity.
Yes.
The three P's, patience, perseverance, and profanity, because the automobiles that people used, the roads were terrible, and they didn't have tires like we've got them today, and the vehicles were open vehicles in general, and it was a pretty mucky mess. I mean, you really had to be aware you were going to get pretty dirty. That's why they had the long coats, and the women would wear things to cover their hats and their hair and their faces and their dresses, because it really was messy. But, boy, it was a lot more efficient than a covered wagon, I think.
Well, there were some stagecoach companies that actually recommended that their passengers wear brown or gray because the dirt wouldn't show from the roadway. But keep in mind, the early automobiles had a few other challenges because there really wasn't a network of roads. It wasn't unusual to have what they thought was a highway end in some farmer's barnyard. There was no road signage. There were no guardrails. There were no, roads didn't connect. There was no easy way to figure out how to get from, what would be a good example? Once you cross the Mississippi River, for instance, there wasn't there was no bridges across the Mississippi, but there was also no connections.
Mm-hmm.
You followed the cart wheel paths of other vehicles and hoped that they were ultimately heading where you wanted to go and not going to be turning around and taking a detour to someplace else.
I love the portrayal that you give of the various aspects of lifestyle that people had to endure. And Horace Greeley was a man that decided he was going to go across the country. And I love this section, and I'm going to read it verbatim because to me it is so visual. Horace really learned about primitive simplicity. Everyone lived in tents or in the open. There was not a table or chair to be seen anywhere, and the diet consisted of salt pork, bread, beans, and coffee, and things didn't improve with time. Another traveler a few years later, a few miles north of Denver, found the diet nauseating. Quote, it would have required a first-class quartz mill to masticate the bread, and nothing more dainty than a buzzard could have eaten the other article. The cook was an Irishman who was filthy enough himself to sell as real estate. Oh, boy. That is really something. Now,
well,
times have changed, and am I glad. Oh.
Well, and if you look at the illustration of Horace Greeley that's in the book, and by the way, he's the guy that did the Go West Young Man quote. Horace Greeley was the editor of the New York Tribune, and, you know, he wore suits. That was his life. He lived in suits every day when he went to the office. And he decided to see for himself what life was like on the trek west, and he recorded where the last time was that he could find chocolate, where the last time was that he could get his boots polished, or, oddly enough, steak disappeared in Kansas, which was about to become the beef capital of the nation. The last time he saw table and chairs, the last time he saw cutlery, he arrived in Denver rather the worse for wear and was very effusive at the fact that he had heard a rumor that there was actually going to be some fresh vegetables in town, and he got really excited about that. But he went from this button-down businessman to somebody who was sleeping under his wagon at night and looked quite the worse for wear and was basically eating what he could find because there wasn't much of anything available.
Boy, am I glad times have changed. I know I've said it more than once during this interview, but I really, really mean it. Diane, your book is absolutely fascinating. You go into the history about the Chinese laborers, all of the various areas of the country, the different interstates that were developed, so much of what has evolved and enabled us to be with this phenomenal infrastructure that has allowed our nation to transport goods, services around a tremendous amount of land efficiently and effectively. And we so depend on it today. We just don't recognize nor appreciate many times, as you have appreciated, what it took to get us to where you are. Now, you're a freelance writer and editor, and you go between Ontario, Canada, and Fernandina Beach, Florida. I know you said you don't have a website, but the publishing house, University Press, would be available. That's where you would go to find out about the book, or I'm sure it's on Amazon.com as well.
University Press of Florida is the publisher, and all of the major book chains carry it, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Books A Million. They've all got it.
It is incredible. I just think this would be something wonderful to share with young people that haven't a clue about what it took to get to where we are today. Diane, I thank you so much for your magnificent publication, and the history in here is just absolutely marvelous. And it entails so many different cultures, so many different environments. It really adds to an awareness that I think most of us could really appreciate much better if we knew about it. Thank you so much for your time, your effort, and for doing such a fine job on such a, well, my goodness, a difficult subject, I think.
Well, it was. Thank you very much for your kind words, and it's been a pleasure.
You have a delightful summer now. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, On Ramps and Overpasses by Diane Perrier. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open, and if you would like to have me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'd be delighted to do it. This is the telephone number to call in to, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, the Renaissance Fair, I know you're hearing the ad. For those of you in the state of Washington, I hope you can make it out. We've got 2 weekends to go. And day after tomorrow is the beginning of the second one. And we have just so many wonderful things going on. The weather is going to be gorgeous here. Yes, it's going to warm up to 80 degrees. And it's just going to be perfect for watching the knights joust, for watching the magic shows, for seeing and enjoying good food, wonderful people, costumes of all kinds of designs, and I will be there doing many readings for people as well as having an abundance of books, and I would be delighted if you come by and say hello and look for the booth that has the gigantic yellow banners and the red lions as the insignia on it. That's what I stand for when I'm participating in it. It's on the back of the booth and on also on the inside of the booth, so look for that. And by the way, if you have a story about the paranormal and you would like to have it added to my collection that's building for an upcoming book, please send it to me, Donna, at DelphiInternational.com. Your story could make a difference in somebody else's life, and I would just love to hear what your story is. It can be about a dream. It can be about anything that had an impact on you in a very, very special way. If your story involves being in a certain part of the world or involves maybe members of family and their experiences, I'd still like to hear about it. So send it to Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, international.com, and put in the subject line for Donna's book. And that or whatever, something equal, so that I know that it is for that publication, and do put the high importance little, you know, the little exclamation point, that little red exclamation point. It really makes a difference. Well, I think you probably are familiar with a little critter that I have known of through the years, especially having lived in California. Michael Bodan, when I found out about him, he's an exterminator. Yep, that's right. Well, he decided that he wanted to do something to find in Texas. And believe me, the cockroaches grow hefty in Texas. Well, he was going to try to find Dallas's largest cockroach. And He thought, gee, what am I going to do with all of these carcasses that I have left over after doing the extermination procedure? Well, Michael, I guess, Rusta must have really been bored out of his mind, because it's the only reason I can think of anybody doing something like this. He decided to dress up these dead cockroaches as celebrities. Ah, yes. I have a photo in front of me of Marilyn Monroe. Yeah, hard to believe? Believe me, it's real. He also had one called a Liberace. Poor Liberace would, I think, just go, ah. I don't know, maybe he would have felt complimented. But this cockroach, and that, you know, they've enlarged it, but he's got a gold lame bow tie, and he's got a sparkling jacket, and he even has a vest with diamonds. Well, he put so many of these together that he established the Cockroach Hall of Fame. When you think you've heard of everything, you hear of something you'd never imagine. Well, I guess it is very popular. It's in Plano, Texas, and you'll be able to see H. Ross Perroach, David Letter Roach, I told you about Marilyn, and, of course, the Liberace, but he's got a lot more. So if you're trying to find something that nobody's seen before, and I would just suggest, go to Plano, Texas, to the Cockroach Museum, and you'll have something to talk about when nobody else can think of something to say. You'll be able to come up with a subject that'll boggle their minds. Maybe give them a few willies, but that's okay. Never, it's always something unique and different. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756, if you would like to give me a call. Well, and then I've got some information here about a baker that decided he was going to fix a hot cross bun and break all records. Well, he did. It was 48 inches in diameter. I mean, I'm looking at bread here. I bet you everybody had a great time, because your hot cross buns have all kinds of, you know, sweet things in it, and then it's got this wonderful frosting that goes on top of it, and it's just a favorite of so many families, especially around Easter time. Well, this is one. I don't know how many it would have fed, but it is huge. People do some fascinating things because nobody else has done it before. And if you have a unique story or something like that that you feel that would be fun for me to know about, be sure that you tell me about it, because you never know, I might be able to use it on the show. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756 is the telephone number if you'd like to call in and chat. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about a subject that concerns millions of people in the United States. What is that? Diabetes. Diabetes is not something to joke about. We had a member of our family that lost the use of his legs. We saw gangrene in the lower torso of his body and saw what it did to him, and it was not a pretty sight, believe me. Well, Dr. Rypek is a doctor that believes that we can do more than what we've been given information about, and he has put out a book called The 30-Day Diabetes Cure, and it is really well done. So Dr. Rypek is going to be my guest, and we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. Next week, we've got an interesting array of guests. We're going to be talking about when prayers aren't answered, what you do. Don Walchen is going to be with me. Then we're also going to be talking with Pamela Wibble. She's one of these women that is a leader and wanting to show the shift of how we can change things. Paul Rademacher, who's with the Monroe Institute that does research on the brain, altered consciousness, and we're going to have him next week. At the crossroads is going to be about the automobile industry. Abe Amador is going to be my guest. And then riding the current, dealing with the feeling of overwhelmed by technology and all the things that come with it. So we've got an interesting array of guests next week, and I will be delighted if you're able to join us. Tell your friends, And if you miss any of the shows, remember, you can always go into the archives to find out and listen to at your leisure any program that you would like to listen to. I wanted to share some information about traveling. So many people I know today are in business, and they're on the road quite a bit. They're not just necessarily salespeople. Sometimes you have conferences and various things that you're going to. But if you're on the road quite a bit, you need to be able to maintain your physical wellness. And there's some real good tips about how to make your time on the road more, how can I say, more relaxing so that you don't have high levels of stress. And of course, with today's technology, we are able to keep in touch with people a lot more readily and easily than we were in the past. I can remember times when I would get so stressed years ago before we had cell phones, when you had to stop at a coin phone. And there's very few of those around anymore, but there's still a few left. But if we didn't have cell phones, so you would try to find a place where you could make a phone call to let people know if you were lost. And it was really quite a challenge. And today we take the cell phones for granted. We just flip open that phone and bingo, it's operative and we're able to be connected to someone. Well, there's all kinds of things that you can do relative to technology that can help you stay fit, keep in shape. You can avoid having severe jet lag results because of what you take along with you. I take a DVD player with me. They're very small, they're very compact, and I know I have my exercise videos that I just absolutely love, and I take them with me wherever I go because it's easy. And in a hotel room, I can do whatever exercises I want to do in the privacy of the room and feel rested. And if there's a lot of stress from driving or from flying or whatever commuting process you're going to use, it enables you to unwind. Also, at the airports, they are starting to put in facilities, gyms. Now, in Las Vegas, you're going to find it, but there's a lot of places, the Florida airports, many, many places, that have found that travelers are really taking advantage of this because they may have layovers or they have long times that are between flight schedules, and so they have to be at the airport. This enables them to work off their stress, and it really is becoming very, very successful. And, of course, hotels often now are including them. And you need to remember when you travel to get plenty of sleep. And try to remember to keep your hands washed because you're picking up stuff all the time. But there are different places that if you are more than 100 miles from home and let's say you're not feeling well, there is the America Global Emergency Services that you can contact and they can give you information. So look up the America Global Emergency Service to find out what they would offer to you. But there is so much we need to remember that is available for us today. Staying hydrated when you travel, it really makes a difference. Now, what if you've got kids that you're traveling with? Well, I think it's been the same for parents as far back as anyone can remember, and that is always bring along stuff that the kids can do. Well, today they have their iPods, they have their little electronic games, but sometimes coloring books, portable books that you can take, maybe put it on an electronic unit, and they're able to read, and also there are units that are available that carry movies and things like this. It's amazing what we have available for travel today that can really keep your youngsters occupied. But remember also, you need to be aware that when they're eating, don't give them so much of the junk food. Give them snacks, and I've known moms forever that will always carry snacks for their kids to make sure that they're going to be getting what mom wants them to eat. Because often on the planes anymore, you're not going to be getting meals. You need to make sure that you have things that are available for your children as well as for yourself. This is important to remember. Now, if you're trying to find out about fares and you're really wanting to do something for yourself, I've got some wonderful tips. They actually are from Janice Lieberman. And I think that they're really great, so I'll share them with you. We're going to be going on break in just a moment. The telephone number to call into if you'd like to chat with me is 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to share with you some websites for those of you that are interested in traveling, maybe getting special deals on plane flights, etc. But let me give you first some sites if you're interested in saving some money. There is a site called Cost to Drive, COSTTODRIVE. Now, if you're going to be commuting for a good distance, it will calculate your cost, which mileage, gas, travel time, and carbon footprint of driving anywhere in the United States. And just after the interview we had today, there's just so much information and so many places you could go to. This could really help you out. Also, you can go to goldstar.com, and there you'll find out how to buy tickets at half price to sports events, comedy shows, all kinds of different things, the opera, whatever you're interested in. And then another site for savings is myshoes.com. I've got to tell one of my girlfriends about it because she just absolutely loves shoes. Anytime she can find a deal on buying shoes, she's really interested in it. You can find out about hundreds of brands and retailers that will have this. And I know I found it quite interesting when I was trying to buy some luggage, all of the different opportunities to research and to go to different sites and find out about sales and prices. And, of course, right now this is a good time if you're interested in buying luggage for travel. There are a number of very, very highly recommended luggage companies, and they are liquidating their previous stock. And in today's world, when you're traveling, one of the things you want to be attentive to is the weight of your luggage, and that's before you put anything in it. It really does make a difference. And I have had bags that were 15 to 17 pounds just in the framework construction. So with the limitations on poundage that you can take, you need to be alert to that. And they're coming up more and more with materials and ways of structuring bags so that they are sturdy. They will handle the gorilla that manages the luggage transfers between planes, etc. that you never see, well, they do survive, and they last for a good period of time. So depending on how often you travel, that is something that really does make a difference. And if you're going overseas, it really is very, very significant. Also, I wanted to share some tips that had been passed along by Janet. She said there is a site, hotels.com. They list over 70,000 properties, and you can get a room for a very reasonable rate. And she suggests if you know your destination, get your room first, then book your flight. So she said you want to be sure you also view the photos of the room. And she said there's a site called TripKick.com, TripKick.com. And they list information, she said, about the good, the bad, and the ugly regarding hotels in more than 20 U.S. cities and even in some international destinations. And there is a site if you'd like to rent a place, rent a house, for example. Maybe there's a large group if you're going on a trip. You can go to Otalo.com, O-T-A-L-O.com, and they've got vacation house rentals. I mean, it's just all kinds of things available to you. And you can list specific things you want. Maybe you're going to be in Arizona and you'd like to have the place you rent have a pool, and you want to be able to take your animals. So all of this. Now, the car rental, she said, you want to be sure you have your car rented before you leave on your trip. Don't do it at the arrival at the airport. Gee whiz, I'm going to go rent a car now. I can tell you from personal experience, if you are taking a trip, you need an automobile, book it. I have been on trips, and this was a few years ago when I learned this lesson. For some reason, I didn't book my auto in advance. And I get at the airport, and lo and behold, there are 45 conventions going on, and all the rental cars are gone. There's nothing available. So it's a good idea to be sure you rent your vehicle in advance. And you probably will save on airport fees and taxes when you pick up your car if you book it in advance. And most of the airports have free shuttles. They have free shuttles to and from wherever the pickup sites are. So you just need to be sure that you really, really pay attention to that. And there's also something that I didn't know about. When you get off of a plane, if you want to check on a flight maybe you're connecting with, you can use an iPhone or an iPod Touch app with a FlightAware flight tracker, and it will track your airline, the flight number, the route, within 5 minutes of real time. Now, this is the website that you can use. It's called FlightAware.com. And then you've got what they call check-in at Foursquare, a free app for iPhones, BlackBerries, Palms, and Android phones. My education is sadly lacking when it comes to the Android phones. So you can, there's so many things with technology that are available to you. And one thing you really need to be aware of, and that is when you're getting your plane tickets, be careful about hidden fees. Be aware that airlines, some of them, not all of them, are charging $100 extra for a seat that has more legroom. And airlines typically today are charging $15 to $25 to check a bag. And there are certain airlines, they've really shot up the price on baggage costs. They're going to charge you $45 a bag. Ouch. So there's just amazing costs that can suddenly surprise you. So be sure you check those airline fees. And believe me, they can add up. I know. Well, this is Donna Sebo. I know that we're just about out of time here. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking about a disease, diabetes, that can be cured. Yes, through diet. This is not mumbo jumbo. We'll be talking with a doctor that his patients have had turnarounds that are absolutely amazing, and you'll hear it right here on the Donna Sebo Show. Also, I wanted to be sure to remind you, when you're traveling, take along your vitamins and your supplements. You want to stay well. Remember, It's very, very inexpensive to keep yourself in good health so that you can enjoy the journeys that you take. Remember always that you're master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be here with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. Look forward to having you join me again tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.